This is KGMI Connects with Joe Tian, a live local show about our community and you on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Today, outside the courtroom in Minneapolis, where Derek Chauvin was found guilty, people celebrated. There were chants of, "This is what democracy looks like," as well as "Black Lives Matter."
That's CBS News Chief Justice and Homeland Security Correspondent Jeff Pegues reporting from Minneapolis this afternoon, where Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer, was found guilty of all charges that were brought against him in the death of George Floyd. Can be called a murder at this point. He's convicted of second and third degree murder in the state of Minnesota. And joining us now for this part of the program to get us going here and talk about these charges and what could come next in this case is local defense attorney and former prosecutor Jeffrey Lustig. Great to talk to you again, Jeff.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah, and so we had talked, when these charges were first brought, I had you on to talk about third-degree murder. We don't hear that charge very often, but start us off with second-degree murder, the most serious charge that he was found guilty of.
Right, and the reason we don't hear third-degree murder here in Washington is because that's not a statute that we have. It's a statute that they have in Minnesota, and not too many states have that. Second-degree murder in Minnesota law is called unintentional murder, and it's what we would call in our state a felony murder or a murder in the second degree. It's the same level pretty much. And what this basically was is the theory by the prosecution, which was proven true and confirmed by the jury, that that the officer Chauvin committed an assault, a felonious assault, a felony assault, a serious bodily injury assault, and in the process of committing that assault, caused the death of George Floyd. So it's a homicide that's actually perpetrated in the commission of another predicate offense, which is itself a felony. And so that's the theory there. And this is different, of course, than first-degree murder or first-degree premeditated murder. That's a charge that in many states carries automatic life in prison, and in some states it carries a death penalty. But second-degree unintentional homicide or unintentional murder carries a maximum of up to 45 years in Minnesota. And people have also asked me, just in the brief time that the verdict's been out, what to make of the fact that he was also convicted of the third-degree murder and also the negligent manslaughter charge. And what this means, basically, is that the judge will usually sentence the defendant on the higher degree of the offenses, but will take into consideration the fact that the jury also found criminal liability for the other two offenses at the same time. But we have one act, and there's one murder, and so there will be one sentence, and it will be all combined in the sentence delivered by the court.
Yeah, it seems like you say there was one act, yet he's convicted of three charges that are related to actually killing George Floyd. So how does that all work out? I guess I understand how a prosecutor would bring those different charges in hopes of getting a conviction on at least one of them. But when a person is found guilty of all three, it seems a little bit like over the top.
Well, it is, but it isn't, because the jury was given the authority to acquit on the murder charges, the first or the third-degree murder, or they could have made a combination. They could have said that the culpability here resulting in the death of George Floyd only amounted to a depraved indifference to human life, in which case it would be third-degree murder. Or they could have said that it was a criminally negligent act or a grossly, willfully disproportionate act that resulted in the death, in which case it would be a manslaughter death. So this was in itself a tactical way, both that benefited the defense and the prosecution. It benefited the prosecution because it allowed the jury to consider the case from all angles and to really make a statement to the community, which the jury has done, as to the true gravity, the true significance, and the true culpability of Derek Chauvin when he committed the death of George Floyd. In a sense that it helps the defense gets to argue, well, he did something wrong and he knows that, but it didn't go that far. It didn't go as far to the second degree murder charge. It was a lower offense. And so And originally they had to fight, the defense did, to reinstate that third-degree murder charge because it wasn't on the original charges. And I will point out that Derek Chauvin tried to plead guilty to the third-degree murder, but the state's attorney wouldn't accept that, wouldn't go forward with a plea agreement, and instead charged up the second-degree murder. And that is done, even in our own community. When prosecutors believe they have strong evidence to prove the larger charge, they will file a criminal information. We don't have grand juries. We have prosecutors that file charges, and they will go to court and prove. This is called proving up the charges, where the defense is shooting for the jury to hang their hat on a lower rung of the charges. So it benefits both sides, Joe, but you just get sentenced on one, and that's the larger of the offenses, and that's what the judge is going to do 8 weeks from now.
And what did I see? He could face, is it 40 years in prison on that second-degree murder charge?
Yeah, from what I'm seeing, the maximum sentence is 40 years, and what will happen next is that the court has a system. It's either based on a county system or a state system like we have here in Washington, where the Department of Corrections will appoint an investigator. They'll do a pre-sentencing report, and they'll go through Derek Chauvin's background. They'll also usually consider input from the victim's family, and they will make a report with a recommendation to the court as to what the sentence should be. The defense will also prepare evidence, and they will try to show that this was a one-time offense, that it wasn't done with malice aforethought. So you have essentially another process, another adversarial process, but there's no jury in this case now that it's in sentencing. And the pre-sentencing report comes in to let the judge know certain background elements about the case. And we know a lot of the elements of the case because this happened on video, and it's been, of course, the source of discussion and great concern for a year now. But you can imagine, you see, this process has to apply in all cases. So in cases that aren't in the news media or aren't in video, these reports are really important. And so there's usually a lot of input and fighting about what the sentence should be. So we'll see the sentence probably in about 8 weeks. And the trial judge that presided over the trial will be the one who decides the sentence in this case.
Yeah, so the pressure moves now from the jury to the judge, and I suspect a similar level of pressure because there's going to be a lot of publicity, obviously, around this and on this decision, and a lot of people hoping for a long sentence and expressing that.
Yes, and there will be, and I'll point this out too, that you will see victim impact testimony. The family members of George Floyd, the survivors, the people that were affected, will be given an opportunity to come into court, and they will testify in front of the judge, and that's called victim impact testimony. And it's a very heart-wrenching thing to sit through victim impact testimony, and it does have a huge effect on the court. But this particular trial judge is a very experienced district court judge, and that state, the district court, is the higher court. He ran a very tight courtroom, maintained a lot of decorum, and the judge is going to lay down the sentence based on the factors in the case and on the evidence in the case. I don't think the judge is going to be influenced by public sentiment in any way. Judges are trained to make that call. They're trained to take that emotion out of it and to just look at the offender and look at the offense and look at the impact and to make a decision that's fair. But, you know, a sentence can be appealed. So there could be a number of things that get appealed as a result of today's convictions by the jury.
We're talking with Attorney Jeffrey Lustig. He's a defense attorney here in Bellingham, but has also served as a prosecutor and as a military attorney as well. And just tell us what it's like, though. This has to be a whole different kind of atmosphere, a case like this that's so closely watched. I mean, we're talking right up there with Rodney King and maybe even the OJ trial as far as the attention and the pressure on the people involved here, like, including the judge and the jury.
Yes, but yes and no, because I think, you know, when you're a trained attorney and you have several years of experience and several cases under your belt, the cameras kind of go away. You don't focus on the camera. You just focus on the case in front of you. You focus on the person that you're prosecuting. you focus on the victim that was injured, and you go to court each day, and the cameras are more of a nuisance, and the news media is more of a nuisance, and you get through that. You know, the criticism of the OJ case, and that was one of the first, in modern times, the first nationally televised cases that we had, was that the attorneys were playing to the camera. And I think that was true. I didn't see any playing to these cameras. The other thing about this trial that was interesting is it's probably one of the very first criminal trials in the country that went forward during the era of COVID. We saw the masks. We saw the plexiglass. We saw how separated everybody was in the courtroom. We saw how there was no gallery. There was not people sitting and watching. Everybody who was present in the courthouse saw it on closed-circuit TV. And that's an issue that our local community has been dealing with, too. How do we get the jury trial system back up and running in the day of COVID? And you know, Joe, that could also become an appellate issue as well. Was Chauvin deprived of a public trial? Was he deprived of access for people to access the courtroom? It could be an issue because of COVID. But to answer your question, the pressure on these attorneys, I didn't see anything that really made me think that they were under a lot of pressure. If anything, now that the trial's over, with public scrutiny and news media, that would probably be a lot of pressure to go out and be interviewed now, I would
think. Yeah, really. And watching the trial, I mean, I think most of us had had a desired outcome. We wanted to see, you know, one side or the other win. But just from watching, do you think the prosecution presented a good, solid case? Or what were you thinking during the deliberations? What did you think the verdict might be?
I think the prosecution did an excellent job. Of course, they had videotape. They had tape recordings of what happened from all angles. They had other witnesses. They had police witnesses. They had people watching on a remote camera. The defense had a difficult job here. They had everybody against them, the police union, the chief of police, expert witnesses, people who worked in the dispatch center, people in the community. So it was a very difficult case. And, you know, I look at the defense attorney as he has a very tough job. You have to defend your client when you maybe know that they're guilty, when you know that the evidence could result in someone's conviction. And it's your job to maintain fairness and to maintain the process and to have the person receive a fair trial. It is an adversarial system of justice. But the prosecution, I think, had an easier time at this because of the level of involvement. You had the chief of police in Minneapolis that took the stand and said, this isn't us. This isn't our values. We don't behave this way. So, Derek Chauvin was alone, rightfully so. He deserved to be alone. And I think that what's going to come out of this is certainly some look at police behavior and police accountability. But we have so many good people in our police department, especially here in Whatcom County, and they get up each morning and they do good and they protect society. They're not like Derek Chauvin. Derek Chauvin is a criminal. He needs to go to jail and needs to take accountability for that. And I think this trial drives that home in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and you point out too, though, the uphill battle that defense attorneys do face, I'm sure, on a daily basis. I mean, in a case like this, obviously, where they're defending someone, and everyone has a right to an attorney, to a legal defense when they're brought to trial, and are innocent until proven guilty, But still, when someone like a Derek Chauvin is accused in this terrible, terrible crime, and your job is to defend that person to the best of your abilities, it's got to be kind of a lonely spot to be in.
Well, and it can be frustrating as well, I think, on both sides, because when it's a human process, you know, the conviction is produced, or the acquittal in the case of someone being found not guilty, is produced in the hearts and minds of the jury. And the process that we have of drawing jurors from the community, you never know what they're telling you is accurate. You know, do you have a juror that wants to be on the jury that, you know, might want a book deal or that sort of thing? And then you get people that are very qualified to be on juries, but they're too busy and they don't want to be there, and they'll answer questions sometimes just to get off the jury. And sometimes you look at the jury and you're like, okay, well, this is our jury. And And you're as a defense attorney, particularly, you know that you're disadvantaged going in. It's your job to place the defendant in the best light possible, and that's not always an easy thing to do. I think when I was prosecuting, I wished I was defending, and sometimes when I'm defending, I wish I was prosecuting. So, it's a flavor for both sides. It's a very different process when you're doing both sides. And I really do applaud the attorneys. I think I didn't see any infighting going on. I didn't see any playing for the cameras. And I think that both sides did as good a job as they possibly could. But there's always a verdict at the end. This verdict came so fast, 10 hours after deliberation. And as a defense attorney in a case like this, you know exactly what that means. You know what that means. They had enough time to pick a foreman, get a coffee or a donut, and then they went ready and convicted him. Yeah. And that's probably exactly what they did. Normally, juries will ask questions. They'll ask to have testimony or evidence played back. None of that happened. They just went in and convicted him. So yeah, I think it was, in retrospect, a very easy case for the prosecutor to make because he had very good evidence. Strong evidence to convict Derek Chauvin.
Yeah, like you say, some strong witnesses as well. Jeffrey Lustick, an attorney, defense attorney here in Bellingham, and also former prosecutor and military attorney as well. Great to have you on, Jeff. I always appreciate your expertise in the legal realm for sure.
Happy to be here, Joe. Thank
okay,
you.
Thanks again for joining us. And we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on as this verdict has been announced this afternoon? We aired it live here on KGMI. I think most media outlets did. And we want to get your thoughts as we continue here on KGMI Connects. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. With your calls, 360-676-5464.
When you make Spring Creek by Bonaventure your home, you're not only getting the retirement of your dreams, the simplified lifestyle you deserve, and a spacious suite, you become part of our community. At Spring Creek by Bonaventure, new neighbors become best friends. Book a tour at retirementperfected.com or call us at 360-746-2432 and discover what it means to live life on your terms. Come in today and learn how we can save you thousands. Once again, that's retirementperfected.com.
Are you looking for a vehicle that can adapt to all your adventures? At Dewey Griffin Subaru, that's exactly what you'll find when you check out the SUV for all you love, the 2021 Subaru Forester. The Forester doesn't just fit your lifestyle, it maximizes it. With standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and 33 miles per gallon, you'll love the extra spacious interior, and with EyeSight Driver Assist technology and automatic pre-collision braking, Subaru is dedicated to keeping you safe as you tackle life's greatest adventures. Stop in for a solo test drive today and discover what makes the 2021 Subaru Forester the SUV for all you love at Dewey Griffin Subaru. And if your vehicle needs service, check out Dewey's Express Service Center. It's fast, convenient, and best of all, there's no appointment necessary. Stop by for your next oil change or any other minor maintenance, and you'll get a free car wash with any service. Dewey Griffin Subaru. Community-minded, community-driven, and the only Subaru certified tire and service center in the county.
The guys at AirTech Heating know you've been spending more time in your home, a lot more time, and that does not look like it's going to be changing anytime soon. So, why not install an air conditioner and update your indoor air quality this spring before the hot weather hits? Call AirTech and have your new air conditioner, heat pump, or ductless system installed today. For more information, call AirTech Heating at 734-5010 and online at airtechheat.net. And stay comfortable year-round.
We're taking your calls live on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
I'm very thankful and grateful. Grateful for the people in this world, for the support, the prayers, the love that was shown.
That's Terrence Floyd, George Floyd's brother, speaking after former Minneapolis policeman Derek Chauvin was found guilty on all charges brought against him, three charges brought against him in the death of George Floyd. And he's been labeled a murderer by many since that arrest last year on Memorial Day weekend. And now he is officially a murderer, talking about Derek Chauvin, convicted of second and third degree murder, also a manslaughter charge. And what are your thoughts? I mean, is this a new... Are we setting a new precedent here, or is this just a one-and-done kind of issue as far as police being brought to justice in the deaths of Black Americans? And this has obviously been an issue that's brought people to the streets, continues to. We have other incidents of this that have just occurred just since this trial has begun, a high-profile incidents, one in Chicago with a 13-year-old being killed, a 20-year-old in the Minneapolis area being shot by police. And these incidents will continue to roil people and cause controversy. And but has this particular case, which became such a flashpoint, not just here in the United States, but really worldwide, there were protests. People took to the streets in other countries, in other cities, in other countries, and at this incident. And was it what was different about this one? Was it that it was so blatant that it couldn't go without notice, and it couldn't go without outrage? Or is it just a one-time deal, and these things will continue, these issues will continue to happen? Let's go to Hank over in Squim. Hi, Hank.
Hey, how you doing, Jay?
Very good, thanks. What are your thoughts today?
I got just a quick one. Why don't people just stop breaking the law? It'd be really simple. People just stop breaking the law. Then cops wouldn't have to be getting aggressive and stuff like that. But it's a real simple solution. Be a good citizen, quit breaking the law, quit hurting other people, quit shooting other people, quit being drug dealers. Just quit being, I'm a good citizen. It's not that difficult. These people just need to stop breaking the law. And that's all I got to say.
All right. Thanks, Hank. Appreciate your thoughts. And obviously there are levels of law breaking, and you know, it's been the issue has been brought up a lot in the relation to George Floyd, and that he was alleged to have passed a fake $20 bill to buy some items at a convenience store. Obviously, not a capital crime, and it's pretty obviously as well, because he's convicted of second degree murder, that Derek Chauvin and the other officers didn't arrive intending to take someone's life that day, but someone did lose their life. Real quick, let's go to Emily in Bellingham. Hi, Emily.
Yeah, I just would like to say I think that, you know, sitting on a jury and making that decision was really tough, and I'd just like to give a shout-out to the jurors and the justice system, because, you know, it is a judgment by our peers, and that's tough to do to anybody, but I think that it was the right decision, and I wholeheartedly support that. But I mean, every time a jury makes a decision, we should hold them in high esteem, because it's a tough decision to make, determining what will happen to somebody else's life. But this was the right decision, and I support it. And I think that, you know, the reason we have deterrence to crime is to encourage other people not to break the law. And we have to remember that that's what the rule of law is all about. So it is a deterrent, and I think that it will make people realize that there are consequences for their actions, even when they're under tough circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and good thoughts, I think, definitely, Emily. And these folks, really, this jury, under an incredible amount of pressure, you got to think. And even if they're not publicly identified, or just to know that so much was riding on their decision and had to be terribly difficult in that deliberation room. And maybe not. Maybe it was pretty clear to them as they sat down that this is how we need to cast our vote. We want to hear from you, 360-676-5464. It's KGMI Connects. And once again, we're talking about the verdict. Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer, found guilty this afternoon on all three charges that were brought against him in the death of George Floyd. We brought the verdict to you live here on KGMI. And we do want to hear from you, 360-676-5464. It's KGMI Connects. Whatever your thoughts, we want to hear from you.
CBS News Special Report. President Biden addressing the nation after Derek Chauvin is found guilty of murder and manslaughter in George Floyd's death.
No one should be above the law. And today's verdict sends that message. But it's not enough. We can't stop here.
CBS's Jeff Pagaz in Minneapolis says as word of a verdict spread,
hundreds of people gathered in the downtown area, first on a lawn outside the Hennepin County Government Center, in which the courtroom sits on the 18th floor. They gathered on the lawn and then moved to the streets.
Floyd family lawyer Benjamin Crump says his clients see this case as a turning point for the country.
America, let's frame this moment as a moment where we finally are getting close to living up to our Declaration of Independence.
Derek Chauvin, found guilty on all three counts, faces up to 40 years in prison. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Hi, this is Marcia Neal from Vibrant USA, here to let you know about some exciting changes that may impact your monthly individual and COBRA healthcare cost. The recently approved American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 may be able to save you money, but you must act soon. For information, let one of our knowledgeable agents review how these changes might impact you. Contact us at vibrantusa.com or give us a call at 866-733-5111.
I'm Rick Holloman. I'm at Hinton Chevrolet in Linden right now. My wife Sadie and I just ordered a brand new 2021 Chevy Blazer. Steve and the whole team at Hinton's make the buying experience fun and easy. Come out and see them and get a new car now.
Hinton Chevrolet Buick, doing business with a tradition of trust since 1947. Located on the Guide in Linden across from McDonald's or online at hintonmotors.com.
If you like Linden, you'll love Linden Hometown News twice weekly on KGMI Mornings.
Linden is on the move.
Bo Wild has the updates Mondays and Wednesdays.
I want to give a shout out to the restaurants in town, Mike. They will continue to need support.
It's brought to you by Nimbus Real Estate, feeding school kids throughout Whatcom County with their support of Wild Bird Charity.
The organization that actually feeds needy children families.
Linden Hometown News on KGMI, brought to you by Nimbus Real Estate at NimbusRealEstate.com.
We're taking your calls live on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
And we want to hear from you here on KGMI Connects. It's our open lines, open topic, open opinion program. Whatever is on your mind and whatever your thoughts are, we want to hear from you. 360-676-5464. Talking about the Derek Chauvin trial and a verdict announced just about 2 p.m., a little bit after 2 p.m. our time. Guilty on all three charges brought against Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer. And I guess that's what the question is. Is this just one particular case? And obviously, there are others that are that will come to trial. Well, one, the officer in the suburb of Minneapolis has been charged in the death of Dante Wright, and then the 13-year-old. I don't believe charges have been filed in that case in Chicago, but so this isn't the last trial we'll see, but. Is this a kind of a turning point as this case of George Floyd and his death caught on video became such a flashpoint around the country, around the world? And I think we're all breathing a sigh of relief at this point, because obviously if there had been different verdicts, maybe even on one or two of these charges, that there would be a different reaction in the streets. Not just Minneapolis, but cities all over. I know the mayor of Portland had declared a state of emergency ahead of this verdict, likely other cities were on standby, had their police departments on standby, anticipating possible violent protests, and not all protests are violent. There are protests that become violent, and some that are inherently violent, but not all. And not all protests over the George Floyd killing or in favor, I guess I would say, of Black Lives Matter have been violent or have begun as violent acts or have been organized as acts of violence. And that's been, I think, a mischaracterization of many of these gatherings, that because they did, in many cases, I'd have to admit, descend into violence. It wasn't everyone who attended who was acting out in a violent way. We've heard a lot about the nightly protests in Portland last summer, and if you paid attention, and I did, there were several nights. There was a journalist who was documenting those and broadcasting them live on social media, and I watched several of those, and they were all on weekend nights. I didn't watch any on weeknights, but they went on for weeks, as you recall, but they would begin as large gatherings and peaceful gatherings, even right next to the federal building that was the target of so many of those protests. The federal building, it was ringed by chain link fence. And the journalist would walk through with his camera, and there would be people speaking, and in certain areas there was music and some people standing about, and there'd be some cheering, and it would basically was a protest and showing solidarity and standing up for Black lives. Well, then as the night wore on, many in that crowd started to dissipate, and they would leave, and a few hardcores would be left, and the journalists would move over to the federal building and document what was then transpiring, and it was turning into what happened pretty much nightly was more or less an attack on that building with fireworks and then anticipating this tear gas and other measures in response. By the security forces there at that building, and it was trading of those volleys and attacks on the fencing to try to knock it down and that sort of thing. But it wasn't violent from start to finish, and it wasn't violent at the beginning and through much of it, but it did descend into violence later. So I think we have to be honest about what really is going on and who is marching and what their motivations are as we continue this dialogue here in the U.S. We want to hear from you. We want you to continue our dialogue here on KGMI Connects. 360-676-5464 is our phone number. Back in a moment.
Now you won't have to wait in line, be turned away, or hear, "We're totally full," the next time your car needs collision repair. Number one automotive body repair, Bellingham's premier facility for brand-certified collision repair, is doubling in size. Number one automotive body repair offers the most advanced, state-of-the-art services north of Seattle. On the corner of Bakerview and Hannigan, part of the number one collision group.
Discover the joys of retirement living at Meadow Greens Retirement Community. Located in beautiful Linden on a 5-star golf course with panoramic views of rolling green hills and snow-capped mountains rising in the distance. Enjoy an independent lifestyle with your own private suite and so many amenities, including a fitness and wellness center, complimentary golf membership, and tailored social activities, or kick back and cozy up next to the fireplace in the library lounge. Plus, fine dining, 3 meals a day at the Outward 9 restaurant and the Duck Hook Bistro. Meadow Greens is a place where your independence is valued while your needs are taken care of. And rest assured that your comfort and safety are their highest priority. It's retirement living at its finest with a vibrant community and welcoming staff. Call Meadow Greens today for more information and to arrange a private tour. Call 360-354-8200 or online at meadowgreenslinden.com. The grass is always greener at Meadow Greens Retirement.
The guys at AirTech Heating know you've been spending more time on your home, a lot more time, and that does not look like it's going to be changing anytime soon. So, why not install an air conditioner and update your indoor air quality this spring before the hot weather hits? Call AirTech and have your new air conditioner, heat pump, or ductless system installed today. For more information, call AirTech Heating at 734-5010 and online at airtechheat.net. And stay comfortable year-round.
When you make Spring Creek by Bonaventure your home, you're not only getting the retirement of your dreams, the simplified lifestyle you deserve, and a spacious suite, you become part of our community. At Spring Creek by Bonaventure, new neighbors become best friends. Book a tour at retirementperfected.com or call us at 360-746-2432 and discover what it means to live life on your terms. Come in today and learn how we can save you thousands. Once again, that's retirementperfected.com.
We're taking your calls live on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
Thanks for joining us here on this Tuesday. And we found out earlier this afternoon that Derek Chauvin found guilty of all charges brought against him in the death of George Floyd. Talking about protests as well, and going back to the phones, let's welcome Jim in Bellingham to the program. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Joe. How are you today?
Very good, thanks. Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, I just, as much as it troubles me that all this stuff happens, I have to point out that the our country itself was founded on breaking laws, wasn't it, by the Boston Tea Party and the Lexington and Concord. That was highly illegal of us to do that, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, and the entire revolution, you know, was obviously a direct assault on the ruling government of the time. You know that, that was a direct attack on the crown.
As the founding fathers said during the war, at least the military end said that we are risking our lives and our sacred honor for this venture. And I would like to point out, I don't want to be too lefty, but that's kind of where I'm at, that James Madison, I forget he was the something early president, he wrote in either the Federalist Papers or part of the other documents that were published back then, he said, the challenge of government in modern era is how to protect the opulent few from the desires or the benefits of the poor majority. So I think that's kind of what happens all the time, is that people start looking at things as if everything's equal when it wasn't. We all should remember that slaves were perfectly legal. And only white men with property could vote. And so if you're at a terrible disadvantage, I don't think breaking the law is necessarily a good thing. It usually isn't. But
right.
When things get so lopsided, you know, and you have so many different problems, it's hard not to expect that some laws are going to be broken. And I think the great imbalances in this country have exacerbated all this violence. And I guess I'll just leave it at that, and thank you for letting me talk.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. And I think some good points to keep in mind, that people do have a right to protest and peacefully protest in this country, and it's that right has been exercised in support of all different causes. It's not just the left that protests. It's not, as we've seen, protests, anti-abortion protests that have been staged outside of providers, outside of doctors' homes and things like that. And these are all, and there have been court rulings on the propriety of some aspects of those protests. These are things that have occurred in and they have happened. They're an expression of our First Amendment rights to free speech. But then when that starts to get into conflict with other issues, then sometimes those rights are curtailed. But yeah, I mean, if you think about it, it is how our country was founded, was on via rebellion. And we look on that very fondly these days, and we always have, obviously, since the founding of our nation, which we feel is a beacon of what the world should aspire to be. And And that doesn't mean that anti-government protest should in any way, shape, or form be violent, or anti-anything protest should devolve into violence. But it has in the past, and obviously it had, you know, did back in the 60s. We had violent protests, but then we also had peaceful protests against the war in Vietnam, for instance, and you know, the famous pictures of protesters confronting the, you know, National Guard in the nation's capital and putting flowers in the muzzles of guns. And this is a debate that goes on forever, obviously, and will over protest and it's whether or not it's proper and how it's conducted. Everyone I've talked to on this program believes that any kind of violent protest is completely counterproductive and destructive, not only to property, but to the issue at hand. And it hands ammunition to folks who might disagree with the objectives of those engaged in a protest. And it where they can use that to characterize the protest as something that it's not, and in favor of something that it's not. So, how do you deal with that aspect of protest when it does become violent? But we'll take a quick break. We want to hear from you here on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
Are you looking for a vehicle that can adapt to all your adventures? At Dewey Griffin Subaru, that's exactly what you'll find when you check out the SUV for all you love, the 2021 Subaru Forester. The Forester doesn't just fit your lifestyle, it maximizes it with standard symmetrical all-wheel drive and 33 miles per gallon. You'll love the extra spacious interior, and with EyeSight Driver Assist technology and automatic pre-collision braking, Subaru is dedicated to keeping you safe as you tackle life's greatest adventures. Stop in for a solo test drive today and discover what makes the 2021 Subaru Forester the SUV for all you love at Dewey Griffin Subaru. And if your vehicle needs service, check out Dewey's Express Service Center. It's fast, convenient, and best of all, there's no appointment necessary. Stop by for your next oil change or any other minor maintenance, and you'll get a free car wash with any service. Dewey Griffin Subaru. Community-minded, community-driven, and the only Subaru certified tire and service center in the county.
Not enough money left over at the end of each month? Then let West Edge Credit Union help you get ahead. Transfer your high-interest credit card balances to West Edge Credit Union. They're offering 3% cash back on the balance transfer amount with no transfer fee when you transfer balances to your West Edge Visa credit card. Earn up to $600 and save on interest. This offer is good through May 31st, 2021. West Edge Credit Union, on the corner of James and Alabama. Some conditions apply. See West Edge for details. West Edge Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Hi, this is Marcia Neal from Vibrant USA, here to let you know about some exciting changes that may impact your monthly individual and COBRA healthcare cost. The recently approved American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 may be able to save you money, but you must act soon. For information, let one of our knowledgeable agents review how these changes might impact you. Contact us at vibrantusa.com or give us a call at 866-733-5111.
The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Lots of things are changing in radio. That was going to happen. After the great Rush Limbaugh left us, there was going to be a lot of changing, and it's great to be on in Bellingham.
9 a.m. to noon each weekday.
All my new affiliates, welcome. It's great to have you in my universe, and you are inviting me into your home or your car, and I appreciate that greatly.
On KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com. In the shop.
It's never going to hurt the car to change your oil early, but it can hurt the car to change it late.
Steve from Panacea, Kirk from Angler, Brian from Dr. John's, and Dan from Bellingham and Burlington Automotive.
We said on the show forever, use the fluids
they call for.
Join them on In the Shop, 9 to 10 a.m. every Saturday on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com. Staying connected with your community each Saturday at noon with KGMI's Community Connection as local business leaders share their expert advice. Sponsored by Lighthouse Mission Ministries, Dewey Griffin Subaru, Feller Heating and Air Conditioning, Columbia Fire, and Vibrant USA. Community Connection, Saturdays at noon on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham, and KGMI.com. We're taking your calls live on KGMI Connects, 360-676-5464.
Thanks for joining us here on this Tuesday and talking about the verdicts in the George Floyd case, the Derek Chauvin case, I should say. Convicted on all three charges brought, second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter charge brought against Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer. And I guess we have to remember there are a couple of other officers that were on the scene that I believe still face charges in that case. We'll see where that goes. I think some of them, at least one or two, were trainees. So caught in an an unfortunate situation there where the officer who is supposed to be training them is now a convicted murderer in that incident. So that had to be tough to be in that position where you're learning the trade of policing, and the officer is training you is committing what is later found by a jury to have been murder. That's difficult. But one of our callers earlier was talking about the jury and what a difficult job and a noble job that they had and that they did. They performed this. You got to think they had an incredible amount of pressure on them. Obviously, they didn't see what was happening out. You know, out they're not supposed to pay attention to what's happening out in the real world and in relation to the trial that they're taking part in. But you can just imagine the pressure that they found on themselves as they listened to this evidence and felt the time that they would take the case and begin deliberations drew nearer. How much pressure they felt on themselves, and that not to be one, you know, we hear about jury duty and being something that someone wants to avoid all the time. I sat on a jury one time, a criminal jury, and I found it to be fascinating. It was in another state. It involved a young man who faced a sexual assault charge, and it was really interesting. I found that when we first were presented with the case, it seemed pretty cut and dried. And then as we watched it evolve and watched the evidence that was presented against this young man and the arguments that were made in favor of conviction from the prosecutors, and then there wasn't a whole lot of a defense presented, but when we were shown the charges and the definition of the charges and what basically had to be proven by the prosecution to convict that young man of the charges that were brought against him, it became quite clear to us, at least most of us on the jury, that they didn't prove their case. We did have a couple of jurors that who were convinced, however, that he had done what he was accused of doing, and it took quite a bit of debate before. And there was a stretch where we were concerned, a number of us anyway, were concerned that we were going to be deadlocked, that there was going to be a hung jury, that we couldn't come to a verdict on the case. And we had sat through this trial for a number of days. We didn't want to have it end that way. And the majority of us were in favor of acquittal. We had a couple of holdouts who, however, wanted to, in our mind, ignore the lack of evidence and still bring a conviction. Ultimately, they gave in, I think grudgingly. And we had been a pretty friendly group through most of it, but after that deliberation,
it was pretty heart-wrenching and a difficult decision. And I felt that there was definite tension and unease and unhappiness among some of the jury members as we disbanded. And we didn't all depart as friendly as we had been through the whole process of the trial and then the early part of deliberations. So a difficult task that we American citizens are called upon to perform, that's for certain. And in most cases, it's not that heavy, and thank goodness. But when we're called on to judge our peers, it's not an easy task. And especially for these folks who are called into a situation like that with that kind of pressure, that kind of emotion attached, and just knowing what's out on the streets or who's out on the streets and what they want to hear and are demanding to hear from you. You just have to hope that people can still function in a unbiased way in those situations. So it's been, this whole trial, this whole situation has been a trial for all of us, a trial for our nation. And not completely over yet, but a big hurdle that we've gotten over. And hopefully things will remain peaceful around our country and our cities. And we appreciate your taking part. You're joining us here on KGMI Connects. We will be back tomorrow, as always, and eagerly await your participation. Hope you stick around. The afternoon news is next here on KGMI. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.